Hello, everybody. This is Stephen Allison. This is The Warm Down. This is now a regular Monday night podcast. It's audio, it's video. So if you're on the YouTube channel, obviously you are sitting here watching it now, aiming to get these out every single Monday night. But they're also available on iTunes if you just prefer the audio. There's not really much comment interaction on these ones. We're just pretty much sitting down with one of our mates that's a bit of a YouTube influencer themselves and having a conversation about the weekend's games. This is available on iTunes, Castbox if you're one of those Android weirdos, and also Stitcher as well this week. So today I am delighted to be joined by one of my mates, Statman Dave, a.k.a. Dave, a.k.a. Statman Daddy, a.k.a. Big Daddy Cool, a.k.a. whatever else we want to throw at him. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, decent. It's interesting that you slag off your audience before the podcast starts. But, you know, different people have different approaches, and I think it's absolutely fine, Alson.
They are aware of this. Their nickname is the motherfuckers, so they're used to this sort of shit. This is why they're here, David. Get it twisted. So, anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Actually, before we get started, loads of people are like, ooh, there's a beef between Howson and Dave in the comments on YouTube. Like, Dave's my mate.
Let's leave it. Let's leave the beef, Howson. Let's get the stories going.
we fucking travel around Europe together. I take the piss out of him because I like him. If I didn't like him, I'd just be like,
I'm bored.
So anyway, yes, we've had a fucking belting weekend. As United fans, obviously, we've had an absolutely belting weekend of football this weekend. Pretty much couldn't have asked it to go much better, I don't think. What do you reckon?
No, I think it's absolutely perfect. You know, City losing in the FA Cup. Pep Guardiola, like that tweet that you did, that absolutely banged. You know, not winning a silverware in his first season at Manchester City. Could finish fifth in the Premier League. It's an interesting one. And then the Liverpool result was huge. Sam Allardyce, again, doing a massive favour to Manchester United and Mourinho. What a performance from Crystal Palace. But Liverpool looked so poor in the last few weeks without, obviously, Sadio Mane's work and ability to press, but also his attacking intent. Scored the most goals for Liverpool in the Prem. Liverpool looked like a shade of their former selves at the start of the season. So it's geared on for United to take this fourth space.
Maybe even third. Watching Liverpool yesterday, I didn't think... Going forward, I thought there's always a goal in them. But it was defensively, I just thought they could concede at any moment. And it's weird watching a team that's so open like they are going forward, that's had such lofty ambitions being the way they are. And a manager that I thought was a lot better than what he's showing at the moment in Jurgen Klopp, just like almost like he's not asked about defending and he thinks he can outscore them. And like you said, without Mane, they don't look that... deadly on the break, and he is really he's a fucking wonderful footballer, let's face
it. Yeah, he's a good player.
But they look so poor. Benteke yesterday, it was easy for him.
But also with Benteke, you know, you look at that Liverpool side, what did they lack? They lacked a Benteke type of focal point. When they can't break these teams down, they need someone that's a bit bigger, that's going to be different to the likes of Firmino and Origi. Origi was absolutely atrocious against Crystal Palace, but it kind of flipped on the whole Liverpool team were quite poor. I thought Coutinho scored a wonderful free kick, went on a few wonderful mazy runs, but he still has that consistent issue that he always looks for the shot when the pass is on. Did you see the penalty incident that, oh yeah, it was a penalty because he didn't go down and all that rubbish? But like, surely he's got a squad. That right, surely he's got to find his teammate inside the penalty area that's pretty much got an open goal.
Yeah, I also have to give some props to Sam Allardyce as well, who's doing a belting job since he's turned up at Crystal Palace. Didn't think he was going to do it. Maybe they should consider him for England.
I think with Allardyce, it's something that I mentioned before. Allardyce takes a while to get his method of football across, but when it's across, it's very, very effective. You know, his first eight games, I think they picked up one win. In the second eight games, they've won 75% of those, six out of eight. They've scored 14 goals. They've kept four clean sheets. So one of these things where it just takes time for him to get his organisation down, and something that, you know, potentially other managers should take on board, you know, being pragmatic. Like the likes of Pep Guardiola needs to be a little bit more pragmatic. And Sam Allardyce is the ultimate pragmatist in the Premier League. He's shown that with every single team he's managed. And it's effective. It's so effective. So simple as well. The set piece that won the game. It's incredible.
There was the confidence that I sort of had. Even Liverpool at home, right, it is a thing that you don't often see as well. Like the bigger team taking the lead at home and then not just losing the lead, but losing the match as well. I didn't feel like Liverpool was going to see that game out. I was watching it thinking, Palace are always in this. And then when Palace went up, I was like, I think that's game over. Because even a draw for these, the position everybody's in that top four at the moment is a fucking great result. So I was just happy, like, watching the last 10 minutes or so play out. I was just like, chilling, like, this is a belting result. Even if they get equalising out, not
you were doing your research for that tweet, mate. You were thinking, you're dreaming up. It took you a whole 10 minutes to come up with that rubbish.
So, yes, and we've touched a little bit on Pep Guardiola there. We are going to talk about him massively with the game coming up this Thursday. The huge game between United and City, as it always is. But who'd have thought United and City would have been scrapping for fourth and fifth? I actually, at the start of the season, I'm more than once on record saying that I thought United was going to push for the title. Don't think I was on my own. A lot of people, as you saw last night,
like, I was on that as well,
the quote tweeting I was doing, that thought Guardiola was going to not just win the Premier League, but win everything else in sight as well with Manchester City. How's it ended up that we're scrapping for fourth and fifth?
I think it's a combination between both managers being a little bit different to their predecessor. You know, going from Louis van Gaal to Mourinho is pretty much like the complete opposite on the football spectrum. One manager that likes possession-based slow football, you know, kind of you're going to press from the top, you're going to force your opponent into a mistake and you're going to score, to Mourinho that's sitting back and hitting teams on the counter-attack. That's a big flip. But similarly to Manchester City, I think they've got a lot to blame, like the people behind Guardiola, the director of football, you know, the crew that they bought in from Barcelona a few seasons ago, because they've always had the idea of bringing Pep Guardiola in. That's always been their plan. It's so evident in their every single move that they've made. But it seems like they've built this squad and it doesn't suit Pep. You know, they don't have quality fullbacks. Every single one of Pep's teams have had good fullbacks because he needs good fullbacks to stretch the opposition, you know, down the pitch, creating that width. And it seems like City
haven't done that. Pep Guardiola's had two transfer windows. He spent more than Manchester United did in the summer, and he also had January to address it. And I don't think that they're working on a budget. I think that if he really went and said, I really need this, then he would have been able to get that in January. And he also, I mean, the major one that you can point to him is getting rid of Joe Hart and bringing in Bravo for the errors that's led, that Bravo has led to goals. That's got to be on Guardiola. That's got to be a black mark against his name.
But on the flip side of that, honestly, you're getting Claudio Bravo, who was one of the best goalkeepers in world football last season. For him to, his confidence is just shot. Obviously, it's an interesting one, how bad his confidence has gone. I never expected that in a million years. I've never seen a player fall from grace. But similar to that, Andre Gomes at Barcelona, player that was regarded very highly at the Euros, played very well for Valencia the season before. At Barca, confidence gone. It's just different places sometimes break players. And that's exactly what happened to Bravo. But you also, on the flip side, Joe Hart hasn't had the greatest season at Torino.
In terms of
you know, defensive errors, I think only one other player in the whole of the competition has made more. So it's not really, I think that he could have worked on Joe Hart. That's the thing that really gets me, is that Joe Hart has the confidence on the ball and has the confidence to back himself. That it seems like that Pep went, instead of the long-term coaching plan, which kind of it's now fallen into that strategy, that he's going to have to coach all these players to play a system. None of these players fall into the Pep Guardiola model. Even players like David Silva have taken a period of adjustment. But now he's got a keeper that's got no confidence, a keeper that he could have worked with, Joe Hart, who I feel could have played the role for him perfectly at the back as a ball player. Now he's gone. You know, you work on that one issue with Joe Hart, that the near post, I think it's on his left side that he just seems to just catch him out. Shots from outside the area, he gets nowhere near it. That's one technical issue. You could argue, concentration-wise, he could work on that as well. And the ball at his feet. That's three things he could have coached out there. And it was very lazy to sign someone like Bravo. Getting someone like Ter Stegen, that's what I thought was going to happen. And that would have made sense. But getting Bravo, an instant option that should have come in and done well, and he didn't do well, it's an issue from both Pep Guardiola, but also from Manchester City's transfer policy that summer window. And kind of on the flip side of your January quote, I'm not sure that they could have got a good level, you know, a good quality fullback. You know, is Juan Bernat going to leave Bayern Munich when they're still in the Champions League and they are looking pretty good? Probably not. He's probably the only left fullback I could really see fitting in.
You don't only have to look at your five-star teams around the world for players, though. There are top players around the world playing outside of that you can pick up.
I just think that fullback area for Pep Guardiola, they have to be such specifically good players. It's kind of, maybe it's another thing that's against Pep Guardiola's system, that it is so geared to the fullbacks.
He's playing fucking Navas at right back at the moment. So
that kind of sums up, right? You know, he's played Fernandinho there, Zabaleta's played there, Sagna's played there. You know, he's probably going to play Yaya Toure there before the end of the season. It seems so strange. Like, just stick with one. I quite like the Fernandinho one. It made a little bit of sense. Fernandinho is a very, very good player on the ball. It could have worked out, but he tried it and then he just threw it away. And it seems like Pep Guardiola this season, he's making a lot of mistakes that he hasn't done in his career. So again, you've got to blame, the manager's definitely got some criticism to take. The other big one as well, why aren't we playing either Silva or De Bruyne? Why is it both of them? For me, that doesn't work. You need to play one or the other. And with, you know, not playing a front three that includes Sane and Sterling. Again, it's a stupid use of his resource. It's just one of these things where it seems like he's too in his own style, he's in his own philosophy, and needs to open himself up a little bit and understand what he did so well at Barcelona that was that the pinnacle at world football. You know, he played with two wide players, Pedro and Villa, were instructed to stay as wide as possible. And the only players that can do that, City, Sterling and Sané. And it seems like Sterling's just been dropped after having a pretty decent season, in my eyes.
They're a very top-heavy side, though, but they are top-heavy in terms of not just talent and ability, but top-heavy in terms of like all of their best players, apart from, I would argue, Kompany, but can't be relied upon for more than 1 week to the next, whether he's going to be fit or not. All of their best players, and obviously like Gundogan, but he signs an injury-prone midfielder and then like wonders why he got injured. It's fucking nuts.
Like, the second time in his career after doing it with Thiago, right?
All of these players that they've got, they're very good players. That's where I think, I look at the derby and I go, can we keep them quiet? Can we score on them? Absolutely. But can we keep them quiet? That's what I have to ask. And I think we was in the derby game at home. Yes, they beat us. But I think that the result doesn't tell the tale of that game. They was extremely fortunate. We had the Jesse Lingard and Ibra fuck up, right on the stroke of half-time, which would have equalised it, I think, at the time. It was an extremely close game. You had Bravo two-footing Wayne Rooney, which everyone completely forgets about.
Yeah.
The game could have gone so differently. And I think Jose Mourinho has learned, and we've seen that the players are definitely buying into the tactical impetus that Jose Mourinho is putting on. We saw the brilliant performance against Chelsea. I would expect United to line up in a very similar way, possibly three at the back, five in the middle, and two up front, or you know, one and someone in a bit of a free roll like Jesse Lingard against City on Thursday. How do you reckon we'll line up?
I think it's an interesting one with the first game. I think I kind of agree the game was quite even in terms of the big chances, but I think United got massively caught out in a tactical sense with they didn't deal with De Bruyne and Silva. They rotated that 3-8 thing where they were getting behind Pogba and Fellaini. Again, the first half
and the second half are two different games of football. But I was impressed, and I don't think anyone really mentioned it in the press because he was too busy wanking Pep off. But I was impressed with how the United and Mourinho addressed what we saw. We was completely overrun in the first half, and in the second half he brings on Herrera, who did a fantastic job and actually stopped a lot of City's attack. And then I don't know if it was at half time or later in the game, he brings Marcus Rashford on the left hand side, who's extremely direct, and I thought that was where United was getting a lot of our chances. And obviously Marcus had the opportunity, and in fact it was a ruled out goal, wasn't it, with Zlatan getting in the way of it.
Again, I think it's how you set up against City and how you deal with them. I think one of the things that they've caught out when they play this, when they play the 2-3-8, when they play a 4-3-3, which they've moved away from recently, they've gone to the two defensive midfielders and a 4-2-3-1. But to get at that 4-3-3, it is dribbling directly through the middle, which you want to see someone like Mkhitaryan there. You want to see someone like Marcus Rashford playing as the striker, where it actually suits playing either Marcus Rashford or Martial as a striker over playing Ibrahimovic, because you want to be able to commit these players, draw them in, get Yaya Toure, get Fernandinho on a yellow card. But I think this City team, it can be attacked, and if United do deal with their assets in the likes of, you know, it's going to be a massive game for, you know, whoever's going to play left back, whether it's Darmian or it's Shaw, potentially looking like Shaw, considering he wasn't selected for the weekend's game.
Yeah, I think that was a tactical resting rather than a drop in.
Yeah, there was stuff about the last as well with Shaw. He played all of extra time with, he had a slight injury. If there's some Mourinho quotes where he's saying your credit to Luke Shaw for doing that. So I think Shaw, Valencia up against Leroy Sane. I think the thing with Leroy Sane, he's very, very good going forward, but there's an option there to stretch Manchester City on that right hand side. If you're committing him defensively, we saw the big game against Chelsea where in fact he was playing as a wing back, kept on getting caught when the balls were put behind him into the channel. So that's one where you could target Manchester City. He's definitely United's right back and City's left back. If that's going forward and they can create a 2v1 there with Henrik Mkhitaryan, could be quite nice. I think United potentially should go with a 4-3-3. But again, might be the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, I also think it could potentially be three at the back with some fullbacks played as centre-halves. I think we saw Darmian filling as a left centre-half. I think that would be an option for Mourinho in the circumstances that we find ourselves in, and potentially Luke Shaw as a wing-back. I think that's not a bad option. You're looking slightly defensive-minded, but I think you've got an attacking outlet there in someone who's really directing Luke Shaw. The right-hand side, Tony Valencia, he starts, happy days, and he just keeps looking at Sterling. Every time Sterling gets the ball, Sterling shits himself and doesn't have a good game. But I do think that you've got a problem as who else you play alongside Bailly. I think if you're playing three centre-halves, you can play Daley Blind, because I don't think three centre-halves are getting caught out quite so easily. Bailly has to start if he's fit. The nightmare scenario is what's happened with Rojo, because prior to Rojo and Bailly sort of forming that centre-half partnership, in my head, I was liking it, but I was thinking, in execution, is this going to be too much hot sauce? Is there going to be too crazy out of both of these? But actually, both of them have sort of come together really maturely. and are playing excellent as a centre-half partnership, one obviously being the left side, one being the right-hand side. It looks like Rojo's now out for 8 months. No, so not even just this game on Thursday. Are United going to buy in the summer, do you think? Do we need to buy? Because people are saying, oh, now's the time to throw in Fosu Mensah or Axel Tuanzebe. Not a fucking prayer is Mourinho doing that on Thursday.
No, I don't think it, I think it's too important, unfortunately, to play these. I think both of these players are supremely talented and they will be absolute successes at United. But I think if he's going to throw them in, it would have been at the weekend against Burnley. I think we would have seen Tuanzebe or we would have seen Timothy play centre-half then. And because he went with Blind, and I like what Blind did. I like what Blind is as a centre-half. I think he gives United great balance when, like you're saying, the likes of Jones, Rojo,
he's vocal,
Smalling.
Isn't he? He's a very good organiser, if not exactly. Physically intimidating.
But again, he's very good on the ground and he's very composed. We saw against Andre Gray at the weekend that he stood off at the right time. He made, you know, Andre Gray is rapid, absolutely rapid, but Blind didn't have a problem. I think there was one moment where he span him on the when he was out left back and, you know, Bay dealt with the ball that came in. Apart from that, it was perfect. But again, it was the use of Marouane Fellaini in a tactical sense, playing a bit deeper and basically blocking off that direct ball to Ashley Barnes, which isn't going to be what City do. So it's who you play at defensive midfield or who you play as a protection to Blind and Bay, because I don't think Mourinho would want them to be exposed. But do you go with Ander Herrera? Do you go with Michael Carrick? It looks like it's going to be Carrick, which could be a good option because Carrick has been quite good in derbies in recent years. But again, it's
but do you play both? Because I think you've got to play both. I think you've got to play Ander Herrera for the bite. I think you've got to play Michael Carrick for his experience and his protection. I think what he offers is a little bit more polished than what you're going to get out of Fellaini as well.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you're going to need in this sort of game. City are very fast, very agile, and I think against teams like this is where, I mean, he did a fantastic job actually on the likes of Hazard against Chelsea though, but it just feels like this is the sort of game where Fellaini's going to look like he's clumsy than he actually is because of how slick, small and agile that City midfield and attack is.
I think if you deal with, I honestly think I wouldn't play Carrick. I'd rather have Ander Herrera in there for, like you mentioned, his mobility and his ability to cover ground. Because then I honestly think Marouane Fellaini is a better option than Michael Carrick, because I'd like to play Herrera a bit deeper. Because when Carrick plays, United are a little bit slow in their transition. He's not as incisive as Ander Herrera is. You know, you see the two goals that he's created in the bigger games, the ball to Mkhitaryan, of course, the ball to Rashford against Chelsea. I quite like that, you know, directness. And I think that this United team that is going towards being more counter-attacking, Carrick is slightly too slow these days in terms of his passing. It is a little bit too safe. It's not going to be like an incisive ball. Carrick's going to be racking 90% pass accuracy. Herrera at defensive midfield at times against, you know, these bigger sides is around 70% because he's looking for the balls. And I think United need that. But the big question is, Paul Pogba going to be fit?
Who knows? Was he sitting down at the end in protest? Was he sitting down because he's bollocked? Was he sitting down because he's took a knock? These are things that we don't know the answers to, and we'll only find out on Thursday. I've got something to throw at you. We've got a stat man on, so let's talk a little bit of stats. Now, people say you can't paint pictures with stats. I disagree. I think if used correctly, stats help you to illustrate a point very well. They can be swung around one way or another. But I've picked out a few stats here for you, and some of them are expected goal stats. So I'm going to throw these at you, and I'm going to give you the... I'm going to prove... Because let's face this, right? Manchester United currently sitting fifth in the table.
Yeah.
When Louis van Gaal was sacked, United was fifth in the table. So, has Jose... I'll ask you the question, and then I'll prove my answer to you. So, I'm going to give you the chance to give me what you think. Has Jose Mourinho improved Manchester United?
Yes, 100%. I think the problem with Louis van Gaal's Manchester United is they fundamentally didn't do what a top four side should do, which is create chances. They are absolutely awful. They were ranked like 16th, 17th in the Premier League for creating chances. What Mourinho's done is he's gone the other way. They're creating a lot of chances, but they're not scoring these goals. If you combined LVG's conversion rate with this Manchester United team, they'd win the league. The problem with United is they're not taking the chances within the penalty area. They're ranked second behind Liverpool in terms of numbers of shots. Sure. But in terms of conversion rate, it's
third.
It's,
we're ranked third for chance creation, second in shots behind Tottenham. Liverpool are top in chances created.
So inside the penalty area, I mean, so like actually in the penalty, I think when I looked, it was United was second behind Liverpool. And then it flipped down to the conversion rate inside that penalty area. It was 12.5%, which was the fourth worst, which if you flip, do you know the games that we drew, the seven games we drew, all the rubbish we drew, the Burnleys, the West Hams? If you applied the average conversion rate in the Premier League, just the average, so the average of the 20 sides, the middle conversion rate, United like are 2 points behind Chelsea. because the goals, you know, obviously if you apply that conversion rate, they're having X amount of shots in the penalty area. This is a very open, and you know, it's probably not how you should use numbers. It's similar to expected goals, that you take in a massive population of data in something that's Premier League football, that is quite a small sample of games. But again, on the global scale of it, if you apply that to United, they are doing a lot better. And it's just, it seems like the composure. On the flip side of that, you look at what Ibrahimovic has done this season, been brilliant, carried United in some games, but his conversion rate's at 14.6%, which again, I class the elite bracket, my own rankings of looking at data for a long time, between 15 and 25 is at their elite level. So you've got Zlatan in there that's at 14.65. Over Anthony Martial's career at United, that's, you know, just over nearly two seasons, he's at 18.5%.
Yeah, so if you're applying, difference.
Which is massively, that is like, you're,
it's probably
in
about
the scale.
An extra seven or eight, well, probably seven, six or seven goals.
So it's on, and it's in the line with someone like Antoine Griezmann. That's where it goes. That's where it jumps from someone that's misfiring, that's missed quite a lot of chances this season for United, to being someone that is consistently putting the ball in the back of the net, which opens up that question: were United right to get Ibrahimovic? Should they have gone with someone like, you know, Rashford, Martial through the middle? It's a big, interesting one, and again, I kind of argue, given this injury now for Ibra, MCL, ACL, I've done the ACL myself, and it's a bad injury. He's done both. That could be it. I'd argue now United potentially shouldn't be looking to sign Ibra on a new deal. But anyway, going back to your expected goals model, that's my take on Manchester United.
Right, well, I'm going to throw the stats at you anyway. I'm sure, yeah. But you've already answered saying that, yes, Mourinho has improved us. This is probably more for the opposition fans that are watching the channel, and for maybe some United fans that are having their doubts a little bit as well. So under Louis van Gaal, the expected goals for, so this is what people predict Manchester United are going to score as a rough basis across the course of the season. Under Louis van Gaal, we was at 1.18 goals. So just over a goal a game. Under Mourinho, we're at 1.56 goals. So we actually, despite the draws, we are looking to score more goals, or we're expected to score, you know, about a 0.4 of a goal more than we was under Louis van Gaal. The good one is the expected goals against. It was 0.94 against us under Louis van Gaal. It's now down to 0.68 under Jose Mourinho, and the difference there has been the expected goal difference was only 0.24 under Louis van Gaal, hence we saw several losses and quite a lot of draws and 1,000 nil-nils at half-time, and it's 0.88 under Mourinho, which means that we should be winning, you know, a hell of a lot more games than we are, which is where the expected model falls down, because it can't predict someone having an off day or someone not scoring what their average should be.
That's the problem.
Ibra.
It's like based on such a big number of data points that, again, you what you should do in your, not to go too nerdy here, but what you should be doing is you should be applying a Bayesian model to expected goals, which basically you're applying another distribution type on the expected goals. So, for example, for Manchester United's expected goals, what you should be applying is you should be applying the distribution of Ibrahimovic's chances and how he's taken them. So his conversion rate, Bayesian model, whether it's binomial or however, Poisson, or however it's modelled, and you should be applying that to your expected goal model. Problem is that it's a little bit too short-term, and everything in statistics that I've ever learned, it's all about the reason why big data works and the reason why these models work is because it's all on this big scale. And unfortunately, Premier League seasons aren't that long in the grand scheme of things.
Prior career, cut up to this point, his conversion rate was you know, not far off double what he's been converting at Manchester United.
And again, looking at the numbers tell you one thing. You've got to look at like the quality of chances that they're creating, the opposition, how close the players.
Well, anyway, let me finish on a broad stroke. So this is very broad strokes and not super nerdy anyway. But as you can see, shots that we was having under Louis van Gaal was having 11. We're talking 17 under Mourinho. So as you said earlier, that's an almost a doubling of how many shots we're having under Jose Mourinho. The defence is better. We're conceding 8.9 shots per game prior to under Van Gaal. It was 10.8 shots per game. So when you add that in, and you add in that we've had the most passes completed in the final third, we're creating the third most chances. behind Liverpool. All of these things are building up to Manchester United being a real force. And I've been saying for a while that the undefeated thing means absolutely fuck all. What it means is that United are being hard to beat. And I think it's a good marker for us to say, yes, we're hard to beat going into next season, because there'll be tweaks and improvements. And I do think now that obviously we are going to look to a post Ibrahimovic United. And actually, going back to your point, maybe we should have gone with Rashford, should have gone with Martial. At the start of the season, we didn't know if Rashford was going to be back in the academy or not, or if he was going to even be
I think the Martial one was an interesting one, right?
Martial was out in the Euros and didn't look great. I can understand why you didn't want to go for him. I can also understand why Jose wanted an ally in the dressing room, someone who knows him. And I think that might have been a massive thing. Someone else that's standing there saying, listen to this guy, he knows what the fuck he's talking about. Yeah. And without Ibrahimovic in the dressing room, we don't know how the buy-in from the rest of the squad might have gone down. So you've not only bring in Jose Mourinho, you bring in Jose Mourinho and his staff, and then you bring in a guy who's a figurehead for the team and a leader of the team who instantly commands respect from the rest of the dressing room, who's saying, listen to this guy. And even if he was only brought in just to help the transition of Mourinho to be a respected manager and get the buy-in from the players, he was worth every penny of that fucking free transfer that we got from him.
I couldn't agree more with you. I just think in a hypothetical world, it'd be quite interesting just to see how United would be performing as well. I think Ibrahimovic has been fantastic for United. He's been the focal point. He's carried us in so many different games.
Just his finishing. It's not been there. Yeah.
Would have the other players stepped
up? It's just been one of those days every day this year. Right, that would be the end of part one. We're going to do two parts, though, so make sure, if you're watching this one, the next one will be out very, very soon. Go and give Dave a follow on Twitter, @StatmanDave, and also on YouTube as well. Go follow him. Listen to him on iTunes and Acast. I think you're on your podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all the rest of it. And if you are listening to this on iTunes, please go leave us a review and let us know what you think. Hello, everybody. This is Stephen Allison. This is The Warm Down. This is part two. So if you've not seen part one, where me and Dave just have a bit of a waffle about how the season's gone so far and all this weekend's football, then go and check this one out. Go and check that one out. This one is all about the questions that you guys have asked us over on the Reddit group. So if you're not a part of the Reddit group, go and check it out over there. The link is in the description below. Delighted to be joined by my mate, Statman Dave, today. And we've got some questions from the people that we're going to be asking you. So I'm just going to get straight into that shit and throw it right at you. So the first question of the day is, what time is this on? It's not live. So that was from Jack. Anyway, the next one up we've got is JNay56. He's got a few questions, greedy. Assuming we get there, how do you reckon we'll fare in the Champions League next year? I can see us getting no further than the quarters.
Yeah, I think there's the interesting thing is watching United on Thursday after watching the Champions League games and realising that there is a bit of a gulf quality. You look at the way that these teams like Barcelona, Real, Atletico, Monaco, Dortmund move the ball and move the ball so well in the final third. The first touches are always down. They've always got control of themselves. And then you watch United on against whoever on a Thursday night. There is a bit of a gulf. But there is a summer to address that. There is another summer to both coach all the players, to work harder with them. But there's also signings that come in there. And there is also a number of these players having another year, another maturity is coming through there. So I think the quarters would be fantastic. The quarters would be a good achievement for Manchester United back in the Champions League. But you never know with Mourinho. The thing with Mourinho is he's so good at that level. He's so good at... You know, we saw the Chelsea game. Conte's been has been the best manager in the Premier League this season. Mourinho has just completely teared apart his whole system, doing a single thing of, moving Herrera to Manmark, their key playmaker.
I think you've got to remember as well, the best team doesn't always, or very rarely, wins the Champions League every season.
Well, that's the Mourinho sides on the teams that aren't the best teams that win the Champions League.
True, so yeah, very true. That's kind of fucking hell, yeah. Third time looking
into
for the
that category, right?
It could happen. It could definitely happen. Yeah, I would agree. I don't know if I would be judging United on how we fare in the Champions League. I saw something today which said United have got a 73% chance of featuring in next year's Champions League. We're now 35% chance for finishing inside the top four in the league. That's up from being less than 3% chance like 2 weeks ago. And we're 58% chance likely to win the Europa League, which is massive, actually, because I was chatting to Chris from Full Time Devils this afternoon. He was like, isn't it a 25% chance? I was like, I don't think you understand how probabilities work. But yeah, a 58% chance. Right? That means that we're massive favourites for the Celta Vigo game. And then whoever we end up getting in the final, I think that we're favourites to go through. But this is a final. This is knockout football. Nothing's that easy. We was one goal away from Anderlecht putting us out on Thursday night. So who knows? Do you see us winning? Do you see us getting to Stockholm, first of all? And do you see us winning? Doesn't look like it's going to be that fairy tale ending for Zlatan there nowadays.
No, I think we've got a massive, massive good opportunity here. Celta Vigo are a very decent side. You know, players like Sistu, who played for Michelin, was very, very good. I thought he was a decent player. I thought it was a good signing from Celta Vigo to pick him up and bring him to Spain. You've got players like Gudetti that used to play for Manchester City, who has been pretty decent in his career for, you know, the under-21s for Sweden. Had a really good tournament there, carried them to the title. And ex-Manchester City did well in Holland. He's not a bad player. So I think they've got some good players in there. Obviously, Aspas, ex-Liverpool, who's having the season of his life there. So they're not, we can't underestimate them, but I think we're good enough to beat them. Moving on to the final, again, it's going to be an interesting one. It's you know, Ajax and Lyon, correct, in the other semi.
Did Lyon end up getting through?
They won on penalties, I do believe. They beat Besiktas on penalties. The key thing to that is Lacazette has picked up a hamstring injury. Lacazette is their guy this season.
It is Lyon.
Without Lacazette, they are like a 10. You know, it's more impact than Ibrahimovic being injured for United. Lacazette being injured with a hamstring, with a player that's quite quick. Hopefully, that's going to be a problem for the rest of the season, because you can see Lacazette causing someone like Blind, someone like Bailly, a lot of problem. But without him in the side, that's a massive bonus. So I watched him this weekend against Monaco. Monaco won 2-1. Kylian Mbappe scored the winner again because he's absolutely so good at football. But without Lacazette through the middle, they lacked a lot. They played a young lad, an 18-year-old, who didn't do very well. Memphis Depay, again, had a very poor game. He got an assist from a corner, but the rest of his game, he was absolutely atrocious. So whether he plays through the middle... Oh, no, he can't, is he? He's banned, isn't he? Not banned, he's cup
tied.
I think
once he was registered for us, yeah, I don't think he played for us in Europa, but I think once you've been registered for one team, that's you.
Correct, yeah, sorry, that was a mistake. But yeah, 100%, you know, United should win this now. It's capable, and with Lyon not having Lacazette, Ajax, a very youthful side, very promising side. But again, Mourinho's pragmatism should beat Ajax in the final if it's, you know, if it comes to that.
Pac Mouse, this is a City fan that we have. That's not a complete
I like Pac Mouse. Good lad.
In what positions do you think each top six side needs to improve to compete in the league in Europe next year? That's quite a long question. So I won't go crazy in depth on that. For me, I think Chelsea needs someone else apart from Costa up front. And I think if they get that in Lukaku, that's a bit of a frightening prospect. What about you?
Hazard replacement as well if he goes to Madrid. That's kind of looks like it's happening.
Yeah, that does look like it's happening.
You know, Madrid do that like thing and Barca do that thing where the players start like, giving interviews and like, yeah, that Eden Hazard's pretty decent, isn't it? It was Benzema last week. I reckon we'll see like Ramos this week being like, the Belgium lad, let's... But anyway, yeah, so they need a replacement of Hazard, or they need to get someone to support Hazard, you know, carrying them in a creative sense. Or, like you're saying, if Costa goes, they need to get Lukaku or get someone like Belotti.
Next down, Spurs. What do you think Spurs need? I think they probably need someone with a bit more experience. Do you know who I think would be amazing for them? Someone like a Bonucci in defence or something like that. But completely fucking bananas idea that they'd get him. But I don't know. Who do you reckon Spurs need? Or maybe someone more, you know, more of a goal-scoring midfielder or some sort.
I don't know what Spurs need. Spurs are a really weird one where they've done so well with their first 11 getting minutes that are young players, the likes of Ali Kane, Christian Eriksen, who are their three best players, you could argue, in an attacking sense massively. It's a weird one where the reason why those players are so good...
Hurricane, maybe?
Time, again, they've kind of... I think Spurs may be at the peak of what they can do. I honestly think that this is
without,
where...
Without like a massive overhaul of the team, you mean?
I can't see without bringing somebody, like without losing another player and replacing him directly in the first... I think their first 11 is absolutely brilliant. The first 11 is arguably one of the best in the Premier League, but it is that quality from the bench. And they've just... The transfer policy has just been atrocious. They need quality off the bench. But again, bringing quality off the bench, that player needs to play more than once every 3, 4, 5 weeks. It's like this problem with Spurs where the first team's so good, but then are these players happy to sit on the bench? They need a Lacazette would be perfect, but is Lacazette going to sit on the bench? Absolutely not.
At Spurs. Do you think they're going to be hindered by the cost to build their new stadium at all?
I think so. I think they'll go through an Arsenal-type transition where they'll probably have to look at selling some players. 13 years, actually, mate. 2004 when they won the title.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll get there. Next, Liverpool. A fucking defence.
Yeah, two centre backs.
A good striker as well, actually. I think I think when they lost Suarez, obviously they've suffered and they've not replaced that in the slightest. I think if they got a good centre half and a goal scorer, even someone in the league could probably do them a job. But again, I don't think FSG have got the will or the desire to spend. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure Klopp would have spent some money if it was available to him.
I'd say two centre-backs. I'd say a right-back. I'd say sign Jamie Vardy.
Imagine that. I think he'd probably be open to leaving Leicester at the moment. Is he what they need? Is that what they need?
In terms of the press, he's absolutely perfect. It is the Mane-Lallana thing. They're both out injured at the moment. Liverpool's intensity is massively down. Vardy would start.
Is he a bit similar to Mane in that sense, though? That but Mane, did not Mane's need to look left wide. And go somewhere different.
I just think it'd be perfect. I really do. I think it could be a really interesting transfer in the summer. Vardy to Liverpool.
All right, City. What do you think they need?
Fullbacks. They need, if I was City, I'd get Wan-Bernat from Bayern and probably get Fabinho and move him back to right back, even though he's been fantastic at centre midfield. Obviously, been playing the last 2 years. I'd potentially convert him back into a right back. But then, you know, that's me.
Arsenal.
New manager.
How fucking great is it going to be that if they win the FA Cup, though, and they're all going to be standing there with the Wenger out banners at the parade for it?
It'd be great. It'd be fantastic. You know, it's very disrespectful for Arsene Wenger. It's done so much for their club, but it's time for Wenger to move on.
I actually expected they would announce his extension today. I think that they've not. I think he's signed, and I think they've been holding off announcing it for like a good news day. And I thought yesterday with them getting through to the final at Wembley would have been like as good a good news day as Arsenal are going to get. And I think that they was going to announce it. But as it stands, they've not announced it as far as I'm aware. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's not. I mean, if you've said I've made my decision and it's not to leave, you just why not say? It doesn't make any sense.
Because it'll go off, mate. You know as well as I do.
They're not going to get any worse in the league, are they?
No. Fair point.
I don't think West Brom can catch them at this point.
What about Crystal Palace, though, mate?
Maybe. And then United. I think there's several areas for us, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Fabinho, Griezmann and Bonucci.
If we went with Griezmann, how do you think we would line up next season as a forward? I want us to see us escape 4-2-3-1 because I think it's become 4-4-2 of the end of the 90s. I think it's time to mix it up with a new formation. Not necessarily like three at the back. I think that's just going too hipster. I like 4-3-3, mate. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I'm a big fan of 4-4-2. I'd like United to play 4-4-2, but it's not Mourinho. You know, you're not going to see that from him. I think that's the best sides in Europe for me this season, play 4-4-2. Atletico, Monaco,
anything with two strikers up front is the future, man. It's so hard to... I think when you see that one up front, I think it's really easy to contain that one danger, man. You know, you get your defensive midfielder or two defensive midfielders to drop deep. Your two centre halves are keeping him. You got four guys locking one guy up.
I think the flip to that is if Griezmann did come, United would look like a 4-2-3-1, but it would be a 4-4-2, because that's what Griezmann does. He does come from deep and he does add that level of pace from central midfield, well, from attacking midfield and coming onto the line. He's played a little bit higher over the last sort of season and a bit, but I like him deep from midfield. Very difficult to deal with and, like you're saying, difficult to play against if he is starting in between the two defensive midfielders and then he's ending up inside the penalty area. I think it's one of these things where that could really work out.
That's all we need, isn't it? It's just movement. We saw against Chelsea and we even saw against Burnley, actually. Just movement in that final third is something that we lacked. And that was some of the performances that we've seen from United this season when you've gone, that felt like a Louis van Gaal performance. Because of the lack of movement in the final third, it's very easy to just stand to play pass the player standing still, isn't it? And then send it back around to the other side. But when no one's running around, and that's one of the things that I think that a lot of people really rate Jesse Lingard for, is that his working between the lines is sensational.
I love how he...
I think it's just his end product's not quite at the level of, you know, maybe Manchester United. But I think there's a lot of stuff he does off the ball. He's brilliant.
I think it will be. I think he'll get to a level in his career where he starts just hitting... Again, we go back to this whole problem that everyone's compared with Messi and Ronaldo. Jesse Lingard isn't Messi or Ronaldo. It's a player that works hard, that drifts very, very well from whichever position. He runs in behind well. He defensively is very, very good. He's basically Man United's Park Ji-sung. And you saw how Park Ji-sung had about 2 to 3 seasons where he was in the form of his life. was absolutely awesome. The bigger games, he'd every single time it'd be like Park Ji-sung was man of the match. And I think that's how Jesse Lingard will be used at United. And I agree with the £100,000 a week contract. I don't think that's an issue at all. I think that he's a loyal servant to United that's come through the club, that's shown that he can improve season after season after season, that's showed the determination to stay at the football club. And I think he's fantastic. I'll give him a 10-year deal.
And Marcus, a lot of people like say, oh, we shouldn't just play players because they're from the academy. I agree. But if they're good enough, they absolutely should play. And I think when you've got an academy that... I mean, I had this conversation with someone. I was watching the 18s at the Cliff on Saturday, and I was saying, that's the soul of the club for me. Players that have come through the academy that support the club coming through, that's where the soul of the club is. Otherwise, what's tying you to this random collection of 11 guys that's on the field wearing the same colour? Like, there's nothing, is there? But when someone stood on the terraces or, had a season ticket like Marcus Rashford or something like that for growing up, that's where that connection with the fan base, isn't it? And without that connection, what the fuck are we doing?
I think it's hypocritical that people slam Mourinho for not playing youth, and then on the flip side of that, like, oh, why has Jesse Lingard just signed this £100,000 a week? It's that situation that's, you're saying they want to play young players that come through the club, but then on the other side, when the young players come through the club that's doing a good job, that is a squad player and he's happy in that role, why are you saying don't play Jesse Lingard? Why does he deserve... It's one of the most frustrating things I find in the world, that there's no link between these young players that come through and where they're in 10 years. They're not all going to be the world beaters, but they need to be at the club because they're very, very important. Massively important.
I was talking to a City fan in the comments on one of my youth videos, and they were saying, like, what's the United Academy produced recently? And you're like, well, half the England squad, for starters. You're talking about Tom Heaton, you're talking about Michael Keane, you're talking about Yanezai, all these guys. All right, they're not... FIFA Pro 11 winners, they're not going to be even in the United side, but these are players that are playing at the top level and internationals, and that's what we're producing better than anybody else at the moment. And all right, we're not producing Messi and Ronaldo, guess what, no fucker is. So like,
no whatever will.
Someone sent me a link on Twitter the other day, actually, that might make a really good video, and it was how Belgium, for such a small country, changed their philosophy in terms of coaching and some of the rules actually for academy football, where they took out a lot of the competitive nature of it and various different things. But it's worth reading up on what Belgium
they also pay bonuses to clubs that play, that basically they work out how many players they've produced within the league and they pay them bonuses accordingly.
That's an excellent idea. So maybe instead of getting like 80 million a season from TV money, they work out who had the most minutes from homegrown youth. And then you distribute it that way, maybe.
Look at a problem, though. There's a problem that we both know what the problem is, but unfortunately we're sucked into this now, and that's kind of the game we're in.
It is, but it's an interesting conversation, at least. Anyway, let's get on to the questions. So this one I don't think you're going to be able to answer off the top of your head, but it's an interesting point and maybe something for you to go away and work on. As the number of late important goals, either to equalise or win, say in the last 10 minutes of a game, decreased in the years since Fergie left, and if so, what do you attribute that to? I think it'd be skewed because the 2013 season, we came from behind like a dozen times, I think, in that season, because we were shit in the first 20 minutes of every game. And Fergie didn't care. He knew he was going and he was just like, just bomb forward, you dickheads. I don't think I didn't think you'd be able to answer that one straight away.
No. Again, you've got to do research on that. I don't think it would have changed. I think it'll be that. Football's a really weird one where there's trends in the data that just don't really change.
My gut feeling is that 2013 season, there was a lot of it, and we've not had much of that since, because we've not been really getting the major results, have we? So
yeah, I think with United, that's definitely, it's changed. But that was because of the style of football and the patience that Ferguson had. I think if you looked at a global Premier League as together, there'd be other teams that, Tottenham, for example, they've scored loads of goals from losing positions and they've scored loads of goals late. I think it's moved away from Manchester United, just given the style that we play these days.
Right, here we go. Someone's asked for your neutral perspective, Scholes, Gerrard or Lampard?
Scholes.
That's how neutral you are, like.
Scholes.
Lukaku or Griezmann, if we sign one, will Rashford be the second choice striker or will he be playing out of position? I don't consider it to be out of position for him to be played wide. I think he's very effective there.
I think as a young forward, you want to play wide because you're understanding a little bit more about the game. Why is Kylian Mbappe one of the best players in world football right now? Because he used to play on the left wing and he plays as a striker, like as a left winger. That's why he's so brilliant. And again, it's all about your football. Again, in the UK, we forget that, we throw players into positions. We try and say, okay, what is Jack Wilshere? Jack Wilshere's this. We've not defined that. Playing wide and then playing through the middle is absolutely fine, because Who knows? Maybe Anthony Martial is a better left winger than a striker. Maybe Marcus Rashford's better on the right wing than the left wing than a striker. You know what I mean? It's about playing the football.
I think that might
is the
be
most
accurate
important
in
thing.
The sense of Marcus Rashford. I think his delivery from the right hand side is awesome.
Yeah, it's, like, I criticised his delivery early on in the season, actually. I thought it was a bit flat and a bit too predictable, but recently he's starting to really whip in across, which is, you know, it's looking good. Again, Marcus Rashford had pretty average form at the start of the season because he wasn't playing that much, and now he's back in the team. Form is absolutely flying through the roof. He's been fantastic in the last 3-4 games.
If you look at just pinpoint a couple of points in his career and just say the trajectory that Marcus Rashford has had from not just this last 12 months, but the preceding 12 months prior to that as well, there's a phenomenal rise in his ability and everything, the quality around him. And people are expecting him to, again, be on the level of Bale and Messi and Ronaldo and Griezmann and stuff like that. Where he is in his career at the moment, he's absolutely fine. And I'm really
perfect.
Impressed with him. And his contribution to the squad is fine. And the bigger the game, the better the opportunity to play Rashford. Like, City are going to have so much space behind their defence. Marcus Rashford is a perfect guy to be on the pitch. His acceleration almost feels like you're cheating, doesn't it? The way he gets in behind. It's ridiculous.
Well,
right, next question.
It.
This is a good one, actually. Legendary 628. I see that guy in the comments all the time. It's Derby week. I really want to know where you were on the final day of the 2012 season. Do you know when we drew the league but let them keep the cup because they'd never had one? What were your emotions like in the last 5 minutes of the game? So I'll ask you, where was you?
I think I was uni and I was revising, and I just think I was just livid because I didn't expect us to win the league. I'd already written off and I was like, City are going to win the league. This is rubbish, but it was going to happen given the money they spent. Just, you know, get over it. And the problem was that, you know, the last 5 minutes, you're like, we're actually going to win the league here. And then it goes on and on and on and on. And then you find out the whistle's gone and you're just like deflated. Probably one of the most deflated I've ever been from like a last day game. Just, you know, having the belief of it happening and then it being taken away by Joey Barton.
I was in the March Air in Ashton, which is a block of houses now, I think, amazingly, in such a short space of time. I was with Ben, that I usually do the Thursday night podcast with, and I was with Jaden and a load of my mates, because it was at Sunderland away, wasn't it? And we was watching it on a big screen, and it's actually sort of a City supporters club, but one room is just covered in United stuff, and we would watch like a lot of the games in there. And it was on a big screen, and obviously the game's ended and they're drawing or losing or some shit in there. And we're champions as our game's ended, if everything stays the same. And I remember going like out to Jaden like, fucking yes. Our screen's gone off and you're like, there can't be fucking anything left in that game at all. And we're just looking at a blank screen. There's a fucking pool table in the middle. And then there's a cheer next door, which I think might have been the equaliser. Did they equalise and score again in injury time? Yeah. So there was a cheer, and we was like, well, it's got to be over now then. It's got to be, there can't be anything left. And then obviously there was a louder fucking cheer, and then all the City fans started coming into our part of the pub, and I just went, I'm going. I am going, because this is not going to fucking end well. I'm not here to have it rubbed in my fucking face or just fucking... I mean, what would Jay have been? Jaden would have been five, six. So I was like, let's fucking go. Yeah, he'd have been five. So I was like, right, going, laters, lads. And I got in the car and I drove home. And obviously, you can see all the fucking devs out already, can't you, on that way home, that 15-minute drive home. At the time, I was living not far from the City
in
Stadium.
In Stockport, right? So you were a City fan.
There was people about everywhere. And it was hanging. And I think I just went in, I just turned the telly off, and I just fucking probably just watched nonsense Netflix or something and just fucking zoned out and just ignored it. Oh, it was a gut wrencher. It was a killer.
Hungry.
The atmosphere around Manchester, don't know, didn't go out. Wasn't fucking going out, no way. MXVZJX. Who should we bring in as a left centre back and a defensive midfielder?
Again, I think it's whether you want to go with quality and whether you want to spend big on Bonucci. It's simple as that.
Mourinho, isn't it?
Get Bonucci, you know, get a quality centre back. Someone like Diego Godin as well would solve a similar thing. Jose Jimenez as well, Atletico. Quite like Laporte at Bilbao, but again, injuries have been a bad thing for him recently. But has come back to playing really well. So again, it's just getting a target, getting one of the big guys. They need calmness. I think it's someone that's calm, that can play the ball out, that is left-footed. If they're right-footed, it doesn't matter too much, but it would be quite nice to have a left-footed, left-sided centre-back.
Do you think it's the right time to take Pogba out in time for the next game, as in the first derby in September? His lack of discipline in midfield meant we got overrun. I would actually disagree that his lack of discipline in midfield meant we got overrun. I think it was possibly incorrect tactics from the off.
From Mourinho. From it was wrong. Completely wrong from Mourinho. Levelling up what they did, they went to... Basically, it was a 2v3 midfield, and that just didn't work, full stop. It was very, very stupid for Mourinho not to deal with City's three-man midfield. And again, he corrected that half-time, and he did make a right decision bringing Herrera on. But again, it was Mourinho over Pogba. But again, Pogba has massively improved since that day. Fantastic against Burnley at the weekend. That was one of his best performances.
Unlucky not to get on the score sheet as well.
And massively involved in that second goal, yeah? Second goal where he intercepted the ball, did that little spin, played Mark. No one talks about that. That's an awesome bit of individual play. He's recovered the ball. He's just turned two players.
That's why in the States they have that pre-assist stat alongside the second assist stat. The guy that passed the ball before the guy that passed the ball. But sometimes that's the guy who creates the chance. There's not a chance necessarily.
Exactly. That's
There's a lot of emphasis placed on assists, but sometimes if you're just making a pass, or you pass it and then the guy goes on a fucking 50-yard dribble, do you really get an assist for that?
Well, there are some goals that I'm trying to think of one of the goals recently that was like, well, the Hazard one at the weekend where he laid it back to Matic and he pings it in from like 4 yards, like, assist. Yeah. And I'd say the Martial one as well. I don't think that's an assist because it's not an intentional play from Martial to pass it to Wayne Rooney. Hmm. It just comes off him. You know what I mean? It just hits him.
Could this happen? De Gea to Madrid for Rodriguez and Morata. Would Madrid do it, in my opinion? Swaps don't usually happen, but I think there's, as I mentioned on last week's podcast, there's a lot of word about that United are in for James Rodriguez, which makes no sense to me in the slightest. You know my feelings on this. I think everyone here knows my feelings on this, so we don't need to get into it. But do you think that there's a chance? I personally think there's a massive chance of both of these. De Gea to Madrid this summer?
I think that's going to happen. Inevitable? I think that's, I think, speaking as a pure fan, not as a analyst, I don't really care. I think that David De Gea showed his intent.
If he wants to go, he's got to go. It's as simple as that. We want people that are pulling in the same direction here.
But I think he's already showed his intent to do that. He's already, he was about to go to Real Madrid, bar a fax machine. Unfortunately, that's it.
Not a fax machine. It was a fucking password protected file. I think people just like to say fax machine because it feels better, doesn't it? But it was a password protected file. Okay. And then it was like, what's a password? I don't know. Is it maybe? It's morbid. Ed Woodward played a fucking blinder that night. Don't get enough plaudits. But it's inevitable he's going. He wants to go, so let him go.
But then again, I don't know. It's just that any player that wants to leave Manchester United, I don't have in my plans for future United. As a football analyst, he's a fantastic keeper and will be a loss to Manchester United. On the flip side of that, getting a centre-back's more important than David De Gea. So you sell David De Gea, whether we get money or we do get James Rodriguez or we get Morata or we get Isco or we get whoever, just get another keeper.
We've got an American here who asks a valid point that a lot of people, because we're not American, don't ask because we sort of supposed to already know. But how is injury time calculated? Because it's fucked, isn't it?
It's based on the stoppage of play, isn't it? Every time the ball goes out of play and it's supposed to stop. As well, there's weird rules where you'd make a substitution, you get 30 seconds, where it could take longer than 30 seconds to go off the pitch or shorter than 30 seconds. So, again, it's like the offside rule. It needs to be sorted out. The offside rule's a joke at the moment. It's such a joke. It's causing problems. It really is. The Ronaldo goal that was scored against Bayern that was massively offside, the problem with that is that Carvajal is running in an offside position and would completely take the attention away from by the linesman, from Cristiano Ronaldo, who was then in an offside position. And it's one of these things where it's got to be chalk and cheese again. For me, it's either in or out.
I would change as well for the offside rule because it does my fucking head in. Because there's no advantage to be gained from it. But if you start from an offside position but you receive the ball in an onside position, so say you run back
that's
behind the line as it's crossed.
It should be offside.
It what?
It should be offside, full stop.
No, I don't think it should. I think you should. You've gained no advantage. And I think it allows a back line to be more fluid.
Because you've either blindsided one of the players that's supposed to be picking up. You're standing in a position that is advantageous. It is advantageous for you to go offside and go onside. The things
but now you've got the defence back in front of you when you've got the ball. So I think it's the idea is to not have the ball behind the defence unfairly. I think if you get the ball in front of the defence, possibly unfairly, I don't think that should be an offside.
The problem with that is, like, on the flip side of that, you have players that, like Ruud van Nistelrooy, that used to go off, then basically the play would catch up with him and then he'd be in again, because you can play a horizontal pass, right? You can play a square pass, that's not offside. And I think that's kind of where the rule... I understand what you're saying. That makes sense if they are offside and then they come back onside, which would be okay. But on the flip side of that, there's other motions of play where players are doing that same thing, where they're standing offside and they're waiting.
But I think that gives us a more exciting game. I think that gives you a more open game in the final third, which is all everyone wants.
I just think that linesmen and referees are taking an absolute beating of late, and I think they need a little bit more help from the rules and whether... Like, for example, you could put chips in someone's boots and then you decide that's offside. You change the rule, you say, if your boot's offside, you're offside. Don't matter about your head. Stick your head wherever you want. It's one of these things where we've not moved the game on to catch up with the required quality of refereeing, and I feel it's a bit unfair.
Do you agree with that phrase that it's a proper talk sport phrase? If they can't implement it on Hackney Marshes, they shouldn't implement it in the Premier League. That's
rubbish.
Bollocks. Because there's never six
rubbish.
Fucking referees at Hackney Marshes, is there?
Yeah. No, it's your mate Steve who's got the flag. And it's different, isn't it? It's not professional. You're not getting paid money for it. Yeah. You're not winning championships. You're not getting sponsorship deals. It's a professional game. So it should be at a better level than the non-professional game. Full stop.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think there's a time and a place for technology in rugby league, which I'm a fan of. The use of the video ref was great at first. Now it seems that referees almost just go to it just to make
slows
sure.
It down. Yeah.
Make the decisions. It should go for... And I think that would happen in football, that they would end up going to the video ref just to make sure, rather than just as a matter of course or something like that. And it makes no fucking sense to me.
But then again, you've got to be able to give the referees enough confidence in their decision. I think it's all to do with the structure of the whole system. And I think video refereeing would be good to support it. But like you're saying, football is a fluid game. We need to keep it fluid. So I think there's a lot of issues with the current game that need to be evaluated, and the problem is with FIFA, it's all they're all dinosaurs. There's not anyone that's forward thinking there, and that's going to be my job in 40 years.
Interesting. Backhand O'Brien in the corner over here.
Yeah, if you want anything done, Alison, just in your local affair, you just send me some money. Yeah.
He's not talking about the game anyway, by those people who are sitting there all confused. Anyway, that is it for the questions. Thanks to everyone who got involved. If you want to get involved next time, this is the format I'll probably be doing, where we'll just freeball it for the first part, and then we'll answer a bit of a Q&A in the second part. Hit us up on Reddit if you're interested in that. Go and find Dave out on his own channel on YouTube for some pretty good football analysis some terrible football analysis where he doesn't believe Roy Keane was world class. And give him a follow on Twitter. Definitely don't abuse him for not thinking Roy Keane was world class. In fact, didn't you have to apologise for that?
No, I've retracted my statement, Alison. So
fair enough. I agree. Victory.
I agree Roy Keane was world class for a period of the season, 98.
He wasn't even world class. Well, he was world class then. That wasn't his peak, mate. I mean. His peak was 2000, 2001. He was amazing.
Unfortunately, as someone that was only 9 years old then, I shouldn't have made the statement. It was an incorrect statement to make.
All right, Tiger Woods, you're not on trial. Although you might be. Anyway, thank you for you guys for joining us. Any more questions or comments like that, stick them in the comment section. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Hit that like button. And we'll see you next Monday when I can figure out who the fuck I've asked to come on. Because I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But there is someone that we've asked to come on. So you'll find out then. And we are back on Wednesday this week. I've got a preview out tomorrow, and actually I wanted to talk about this this Premier Punt thing, but we've run out of time, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. There's a preview coming out tomorrow with a Premier Punt section in there, so check that out. Wednesday we've got the podcast with Ben, and Hilly's here as well to talk about the derby, and then we'll obviously be at the derby on Thursday night. Quick score prediction from you, Dave.
2-1 United.
I'm feeling 2-1 United as well, but I will take any 3 points that we can get out of this game whatsoever. Thanks for watching. See you later.